Hi, I'm Ed Ronco, and this is the Up North Lowdown from Interlaken Public Radio. This week, what scientists say needs to be done to help wetlands in the upper Midwest. Plus, we'll hear about an artist residency program in Alberta and what it hopes to offer both artists and northern Michigan. But first, a crisis of mental health among first responders. Since mid-November, five public safety workers in our state have died by suicide. There could be a lot of reasons for that. It is a stressful job. The holidays bring a lot of particularly difficult emergency calls, and first responders, of course, have to bear witness to that. And they're humans, just like us, managing the stress in their own lives. There are efforts to help first responders deal with their mental health in the hopes of preventing more tragedies. Kobe Taylor is one of the people working on those efforts. He's a firefighter in Peninsula Township, and he's also president of the Northwest Michigan Peer Network. It's a support group for people working in public safety. He told IPR's Tyler Thompson about the struggles he has faced and what those in his profession deal with, both at work and sometimes at home.
A lot of things that come to mind is holidays. Holidays is always rough, especially when someone's struggling with their relationship, because that's time like you're going to spend with family. And if you're dealing with possible divorce or split up with your children, it could be very hard. Financial issues is huge. And you just add that to one of our number one issues with first responders, almost built into our tradition, one would say, is drinking. It's a huge rate that first responders are drinking and abusing alcohol. 10% of the cases, they're abusing prescription drugs as well, because they're getting these back injuries and they're being put on pain meds. So you add that to them struggling, they're already not going to be in a proper mindset. Then you put that on holidays, or there's just a lot of variables to look at from the professional side, like the psyche side of it that I can't comprehend, but there's something happening. And it's not just with first responders. I mean, the suicide crisis is massive in our country. And we see that more than others, because we're going on these calls and we're seeing those numbers, and then we're seeing it within ourselves as well.
Do you find that it's hard to talk about, to say I'm struggling in public safety?
It's very hard. And there's still a stigma behind it, because we're supposed to be ones helping each other, and we have to have that tough look on. And it's hard for us to come out and then talk to somebody about it. The other thing is job security. You don't want your employer to think you're broken. Hmm. Now, a lot of agencies are getting away from that and doing a phenomenal job of accepting that. I know, especially in our area, Grand Traverse Metro, Traverse City Fire, Traverse City Police, my department, Peninsula Fire, like Masaki MS, we're all like, and they're all part of the team, which helps. So they got buy-in to it, so to speak. They got peers on the front lines that's doing this.
This is a personal issue for Taylor. He grew up in Riverside, California, near Los Angeles. He describes it as a rough place to grow up.
I've seen a lot of things very early on, a lot of things happen. And growing up in that environment, you just live day by day. So you see a murder, it's just murder, and you go on with your day because you're probably going to see another one or something of that event that's traumatic. You're probably going to see it, so you just kind of go on.
That past is what led him to become a first responder, something he says is true for a lot of people.
I kind of took pride in that, especially getting in first responder. I could see these nasty calls, and it wouldn't bother me. In reality, it is bothering you. Your brain could only take so much traumatic events and pack it.
In 2017, he and the department lost a firefighter to suicide.
And that broke me. And that same year is when I started full-time fire and EMS. And my first year, we had six suicides. That was in the Kingsley area. A lot of listeners might remember that, all the high schoolers and stuff we had back.
Taylor turned to alcohol and prescription painkillers to cope. At the same time, he was trying to educate folks about mental health, but wasn't taking care of himself.
So I started to do reckless behavior, started, like I said, abusing, drinking, cheating, all the stuff, like just not caring, until one night I mentally just had enough and was in my car on a dark night, is raining, and had a gun in my mouth. And don't remember much until like the wife was knocking on the window, and it kind of woke me up from there. Started to get help after that, started to see a therapist with her, and that opened up a bigger avenue and really helped me see that we need professional help when you're at that level.
A few years later, in 2020, Taylor formed the Northwest Michigan Peer Network to get more resources for first responders. It includes grant funding for mental health, free education, and debriefings with clinicians and chaplains.
What they always tell us in this field when we're struggling, or when we have a bad call, it's always, man up, tough it up. Well, I say you need to take charge and own that when it comes to your mental health. Own up to it. Like the best, I am not shy about telling people what I've been through, what I did. And it was a pretty rough spot I got myself into, but I'm not shy about it because talking about that's going to help save someone else.
In other words, the idea of manning up or toughening up doesn't mean ignore your struggles. It means you should address them head on.
So if you're struggling and you think you're alone, you're not alone. There's others struggling, and by you coming out with it, owning up to it, and getting help, you could help your fellow brother or sister that's struggling. And that's the biggest thing I want to preach out there is, like, just own up to it. It is your responsibility, just like it is your physical health. It's your responsibility to take care of yourself. And that goes the same mentally. And we all need it, and we all want to retire from this career and have a good life.
Taylor hopes his story can help others to reach out in their own times of struggle.
Firefighter Kobe Taylor talking to IPR's Tyler Thompson. If you or someone you know may be considering suicide or is in crisis, call or text 988 to reach the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. The Lowdown returns in a moment.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
Pro cyclists from all over North America are about to compete in the last major mountain bike race of the year. But there's these two guys, both from the same small town in Michigan. One is older, a little past his peak, but he's a legend. He's won this race more than any other man. The other cyclist is younger, top of his game, and he's gunning to beat his hometown hero's record and set a new one.
Let's give him a good send-off. Here we go. We're at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go!
The story of an unlikely rivalry. Next time on Points North. That episode of Points North is available now. Listen to it wherever you're hearing this podcast.
Welcome back to the Up North Lowdown. I'm Ed Ronco. Northern Michigan has a lot of wetlands, which are important for mitigating floods and supporting ecosystems, but they are also in trouble. Human activity, including large-scale farming, can intrude on wetlands and sometimes destroy them. But a report last week from the Union of Concerned Scientists says farms could also play a crucial role in protecting and restoring wetlands. Climate reporter Izzy Ross talked to IPR's Dan Wanshura about what the report says and what it means here in our neck of the woods, or perhaps our neck of the bog.
Tell us about the relationship between wetlands and farms, Izzy.
Yeah, in the upper Midwest, in places like northern Michigan, we have a lot of both. Lots of wetlands and a lot of farmland. Wetlands are critical to the health of the planet and human life. They have a ton of benefits, from filtering water to mitigating floods. That's especially important as the climate changes. But human activity, like development and large-scale agriculture, has drastically reduced wetlands over the past couple centuries. According to this report, the rate of that loss has increased in recent years.
Okay, so what's new in this report, Izzy?
It recommends that Congress boost funding and other support for programs that help farmers conserve wetlands and restore them. It says this could tap into the benefits of wetlands, focusing on how they mitigate flooding and other environmental forces around the region. It talks about how industrial large-scale agriculture has contributed to wetland loss, and protecting wetlands that are here could, as you mentioned, save the region hundreds of billions of dollars by mitigating the impacts of flooding over the long term, according to this report. It also says supporting programs in the Farm Bill could play a big role in doing that. That's this omnibus piece of legislation that determines much of the country's policies for food and agriculture. But some of these programs have become flashpoints in negotiations around the Farm Bill.
Izzy, you've spoken to farmers here in northern Michigan about this. What are they saying?
Right. I spoke with Sarah Roy, who helps run Norwood Centennial Farms in Charlevoix. They're about a mile from Lake Michigan. They have about 300 cows on their farm, and there are also wetlands on the property. Roy says they have 4 state sustainability certifications and have worked with both federal and state programs to protect the wetlands around their farm. And she says it was really about showing their community that they cared about the environment, they were good stewards of the land, and getting some financial benefits from that didn't hurt.
Yeah. Izzy, you, of course, are our climate reporter. Is there a climate connection here?
Climate change is one of the factors that can contribute to flooding, and wetlands can help mitigate that. They also store a lot of carbon dioxide, which is a greenhouse gas. Flooding also affects people across the Midwest, something we saw in 2019. When I talked to the author of the report, she said research shows more than 2,000 claims were submitted to National Flood Insurance Program. And the report says flooding disproportionately harms Black and under-resourced communities in Michigan. It argues that by working to make programs in the Farm Bill more robust and accessible to farmers, this major industry in the region, agriculture, can be part of the solution to that and become more resilient to climate change in the process.
Okay. Congress is about to change. The Senate will have a Republican majority in January, and there will be, of course, a new Republican administration in the White House. What's the likelihood that these programs get the support this report recommends?
Yeah, first a little background for people listening because it's complicated. The Farm Bill is this huge piece of legislation that's supposed to be renewed every 5 years. That process is not going smoothly right now. Lawmakers have been stuck for more than a year now. They disagree about some of the programs in the bill, like whether federal climate funding should go towards things that aren't directly related to environmentally friendly practices. So they extended the 2018 bill last year to buy some time, but even that expired at the end of September. So it seems clear that the current Congress is unlikely to pass a new farm bill before the end of the year. That means lawmakers will have to go back to the drawing board when a new Congress takes office in January, and it is possible they could cut programs like the ones this report recommends supporting.
Climate reporter Izzy Ross talking with IPR's Dan Wanchura. Read much more about that report from the Union of Concerned Scientists on our website, iprnews.org. Izzy's work comes to us through a partnership with Grist. Okay, one more thing to share with you this week, and it is about art. IPR's Claire Keenan-Kurgan is about to introduce us to someone named Kelly Gregory. She wants artists from around the country to spend a summer in Alberta. Gregory runs an artist residency at a home called the Sawbill Surf Club, and she says Alberta is a, quote, creative nook in Michigan. Here's her conversation with Claire.
How did you decide to start an artist residency in Alberta?
Myself being an artist, and I have a lot of friends who are artists, and I think just having space and time for people to work on their personal practice, I, you know, myself have found very important. And one of the persons that I started the residency with, Mary Welcome, she's the navigator of the residency, and she's helped start over, I think piloted over 15 residencies around the world. So she's a collaborator of mine, and, you know, she really helped this vision of the artist residency.
You recently put out a call for artists. Can you tell us more about that and what are you looking for in applications?
Yeah, so it really is open, and I want this residency to be like a low barrier residency. You don't have to be a highbrow artist to get in. It's about, you know, allowing people to expand their creative practice and whatever that might be. You could be a painter, you could be a sailor, you could be someone that doesn't think that you're an artist, and those people are encouraged as well, because, you know, I think we're all creative in a certain way. And so I want this to really be a sort of an open and an inclusive residency for people right now. And, you know, as the years go by, we might have more themes for the years of artists that we're looking for. But right now it really is sort of open, open to whoever wants to spend some sort of deep time on Michigan's little perfect pinky finger.
What do you think for people who aren't from Northern Michigan, what would be like your pitch for coming to Alberta? Why is this a good place to do an artist residency?
Why here? That's the best question. You know, the shifting sand dunes, the blues, the colors are just so amazing. That's turquoise. You know, people stand on the edge of Lake Michigan and are saying, this is a lake. There's just so much sort of creative energy that's embedded all throughout the region, with Gwen Frostick, one of my favorite printmakers, right down the road. Always go visit her. The Cabbage Shed is a great place to get a Alberta Rita. Don't have three, just have one. And yeah, it really is a special environment, and it's really, really beautiful. You can walk and have your own private view of the ocean, Michigan, from the top of a sand dune that's like 5 minutes from the Sawbill. So really, I think it's just a beautiful landscape.
Can I ask, do you surf out in Alberta as well?
I do. I surf out in Alberta, and I do a lot of wing foiling out there too. Ooh. Which is, it really is a good place for.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how is the surfing?
I mean, the surfing, you know, you can't compare it to sort of like a West Coast Point Break, but it gets pretty gnarly and pretty fun, especially, you know, when the colder months and the big wind swell comes in. And I love it. I love being in that turquoise water and catching a perfect Michigan wave.
Well, thank you so much.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate it.
That was IPR's Claire Keenan-Kurgan and Kelly Gregory, co-founder of the Sawbill Surf Club. The program is open to artists from anywhere in the country, urban or rural. Gregory asks participants to pay $20 a day to cover utilities, but says she's also willing to waive that fee if the cost is a barrier. And that's it for the Lowdown this week. We had contributions from Tyler Thompson, Izzy Ross, Dan Wanshura, and Claire Keenan-Kurgan. Our producer is Max Copeland. I'm Ed Ronco. It snowed this week, like a lot. I had 15 inches of snow on my patio, and that was before round two arrived. So for our sonic send-off, that magnificent sound of footsteps in fresh snow and the winter wonderland that is Northern Michigan right now. Thanks for listening. Stay warm, drive slowly, and have a great week.